From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our studios in La Crosse. Thanks very much for listening today. Coming up on the show, an update on COVID-19. We'll hear from Mayor Tim Cabot of La Crosse, who's decided not to run for re-election. And we'll talk to a couple of members of the La Crosse County Historical Society all about their brand new museum space on Main Street in La Crosse, downtown La Crosse. But first, I want to give you an opportunity. It's our year-end member drive here at Wisconsin Public Radio, and we're asking for your support. WPR is part of your day, and it's your source of essential news and conversations just like you hear here on Newsmakers every single day. And through WPR programs, you stay connected to your community in the state and the world. You can support all that work right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. That's WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Health leaders in La Crosse County are still cautious about COVID-19 and how it is spreading through the area. Data from this week show the case rate is decreasing from 109.2 per 100,000 last week to 78.3 per 100,000 this week. That sounds like an improvement, but wait, it's not improving in every metric. Hospitalization rates are steady but high. Health leaders say 17.4 per 100,000 is this week's hospitalization rate. The test positivity rate remains also high. 34% of people being tested for COVID-19 are coming back with positive test results. Tracy Cokey is a nurse in the La Crosse area. She's with the Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse, an infectious disease nurse. And she talks about her life taking care of COVID-19 patients.
It's been interesting, busy. The other thing is we get to deal with the weather challenges, but it's been definitely a anxiety ridden place to be. It's been interesting as a nurse to see the amount of people that has come through the tent and the amount of education that can be done there as far as reassurance for people and the understanding that they don't have for COVID yet, and being able to teach them the reasons and all of that going with it for why they need to wear their masks, how the hand washing works, and the whys. Why it's important to wear a mask and why we need to be keeping our distance for people, why we need to be washing our hands and how the hand sanitizer works and why it's so important. People ask you when they're in line and they're getting ready to be swabbed, they are very vulnerable at that point. And so they often will ask a lot of questions. So it's a good time to do a lot of good education.
Cokey says it's hard to watch what her patients are going through every day.
Some of them have died. Some have been on ventilators. Some have done really well and gotten to go home. Some have been in the hospital for months. So it's been a wide range of one spectrum to the complete spectrum of death.
Amy Spitzner is a medical ICU nurse for Mayo Clinic Health System. She says the road can be unpredictable for patients.
The sickest you've ever seen in your life, they can be fine one day, and the next day they're on the ventilator. And when we go to intubate them, we know that as the caretakers for a lot of these patients, we're the last people that they talk to. And we hold that when we go home at night. We can have them on the maximum amount of support and we still see their bodies giving out. It's horrible to see because we do absolutely everything that we possibly can. And even though all of our medicine, our support, everything that we can do, their bodies still give out and they still die in front of us without their families. And we're their only physical touch that they have when they're leaving this world. It's really hard to watch.
Healthcare workers are under unprecedented strain during the pandemic. Nurse Tracy Cokey talks about keeping track of her own mental health.
I try to take I have a commute to work, so I enjoy my drive time and to decompress a little bit. And also being able to have my coworkers be my sounding board, and we take care of each other the same way and make sure everybody is doing well. And, you know, we don't want to bring it home. So it's, we don't want to bring the emotions home or the virus home, but it's really important that we are here for each other and able to maintain our sanity.
The guidance to distance, wear masks, and wash hands has been consistent, but Koki says there's one more thing people should do.
I wish people would stay home. I think that's one of the other things, is or keeping a closer inner circle. I know that some people have quarantined together and just kept their circle a little closer instead of just going wherever they want and doing whatever they want. I know people are still going to social outings and doing what they want, where they want, when they want. And I know that the masks help greatly, and social distancing helps, and hands, you know, washing our hands is awesome. But really, at this point in time, just staying home and being aware of what you are doing and when you're doing it is going to be really important for us to help break this virus.
She talks about the feelings that arise when people don't follow those basic guidelines.
It's very frustrating, and actually it's disheartening. I feel like people aren't, it's disrespectful to medical professionals, and it's hard. But the thing is I think we need to somehow change the culture of what a mask means. It's been taken out of context, that this is just a public health measure that you should take to protect yourself and others around you. This is nothing else, but it's not any other statements involved. This is purely a public health measure. And wearing that mask says nothing else but you protect yourself and those around you. So I really wish that was what we could get out instead of it being in regards to anything else. And I also wish that people would understand that wearing a mask is your right, and it's also your right that you protect yourself and others, and that's your responsibility, and would somehow empower them that way instead, so we could move forward all together instead of such a division.
That's Tracy Koki. She's an infectious disease nurse at Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse. We also heard from Amy Spitzner, a medical ICU nurse for Mayo Clinic Health System. In other news today, La Crosse's chief executive, Mayor Tim Cabot, has decided not to seek re-election. Cabot has been in office for 2 terms. He talks about why he's proud of his time in office.
I am making an announcement today that I will not be seeking another term as La Crosse's mayor. I have some other opportunities that I'm pursuing, but there'll be more to that in the coming weeks ahead. These 2 terms as La Crosse's mayor have been an unbelievable experience for me and my family, and we want to thank the people of La Crosse for entrusting me with the stewardship of this beautiful, vibrant, and caring community these past 8 years. We have accomplished so much together, and our future as a community is incredibly bright. I do want to say, and I remember 8 years ago when I was campaigning for this office, our goals and my focus was on neighborhoods, customer service, and economic development. And I feel very proud and very strongly about the accomplishments that we have made in those 3 goals. I've got a list here, actually about 2 pages worth of bullets that I would consider to be successes over these past 8 years. I'm not going to go through all of them, but I would like to highlight a few of them to share. We have a neighborhood resource officer policing program that I really believe is a model for the state of Wisconsin when it comes to community policing. That's been implemented now for several years in our neighborhoods. Based on our last community development survey, when we surveyed our citizens feel safer than they did 5 years ago. And I believe it's based on these investments in our people and our infrastructure that we've been focused on here in our neighborhoods. We have done numerous park refurbishments, and I can list a few. Hogue, Powell, Luth, Springbrook, Cameron, Burns, Highland, Copeland, and Badger Hickey. We created a citizen-led and a neighborhood-driven capital improvement program whereby we provided funding to neighborhood associations, and they identified those priorities for improving their parts of the city. We started a pop-up library van program to provide library and educational services and materials out into our neighborhoods. We created a new circulator route as a part of our transit service. We did that without increasing fares. We created from scratch a floodplain management program. We have repaired and repaved more miles of streets and utilities, more than 40 miles during my time as mayor. We've also helped to build and repair more single-family housing, including affordable single-family housing through our housing replacement program. We've helped also to facilitate and build more units of multifamily housing, including affordable housing, as a part of our projects with 2219 Lofts, the Roosevelt School Apartments, and the Garden Terrace Apartments and Community Center. We became the first community in Wisconsin to end veterans homelessness, and we have grown our tax base by more than $680 million in the 8 years I've been in office, which is about a 22% increase. We have done all of that and more, and we have still lowered total city spending. We've lowered our local property tax levy, and we've lowered our property tax rate. All of those are lower today than they were 8 years ago. We've developed enhanced customer service, including our 789 city phone number, the MyLacrosse smartphone app, the QAlert online reporting system, all with the focus of trying to provide better connections to our citizens. We've hosted numerous coffees with Cabot. We created the Human Rights Commission several years ago, and they held a number of listening sessions. We've done community development surveys and meetings to help engage with our citizens.
Taking questions from reporters in an online press conference this week, Mayor Cabot also talked about the uphill battle and where he would have liked to do better.
Well, I think the ongoing issues related to poverty in our community and the lack of affordable housing is an area that really is troubling, and it seems to only be getting more challenging. COVID pandemic and the economic downturn and just the concerns with what we're facing right now with homelessness, with people who might be facing evictions, that to me is really the most troublesome and worrying thing we've got as a community. And we have great partners and agencies that are working on this. It's not as if there isn't a lot of effort that's being made to improve the situation, but I know when it comes to affordable housing and some of the projects that I had mentioned, it takes a long time. It takes several years to get through the financing and the approvals and the construction to build new affordable housing. So the fact that we've added, you know, several hundred units of housing over these past several years with those projects that I highlighted is a very good thing, but we need more of that. The other issue that's going to be front and center is the challenges that we face because of flooding and weather and climate change. Our, 2019, it seems like that was, a long, long time ago already. But, just last year, we faced the highest river levels for the longest period of time. Thankfully, the floodplain management and just the things we've been doing as a city for, decades now to improve our levees, to deal with our pumps and the infrastructure, and to build more green infrastructure to take care of our La Crosse River marsh. Those things are going to be very critical going forward, because the challenges with high river levels, the high groundwater that we see in some of our neighborhoods that cause impacts to people's basements. Those are all ongoing struggles that we're working on and will continue to work on.
That's La Crosse Mayor Tim Cabot. Contenders for Cabot's seat face a January application deadline. La Crosse will elect its new mayor in April of 2021. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studios. Thank you very much for listening today, and thank you very much to those who have already contributed during our year-end member drive. Remember, you can give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Whatever it is that makes you want to give, in-depth news, interesting talk, music, now's the time to contribute. Your gift at WPR.org pays for your own listening, but also makes WPR available for all of your neighbors. Remember, this drive supports the WPR programs you love, and you'll be giving books to kids. Ask for the Reach Out and Read thank you gift when you give $10 a month or more. Again, that's WPR.org or 888-202-2552. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest studios. There's been a lot going on for nonprofit organizations this year, many of them really struggling to find a way through COVID-19 and the economic hardships. And it's hard to find reasons to celebrate sometimes. But one of those reasons has come to the La Crosse County Historical Society. They're celebrating the opening of their brand new La Crosse Area Heritage Center. It's downtown. It's right on Main Street in La Crosse. And they're inviting visitors to come to their brand new location. Joining us to talk all about it are Peggy Derrick, the Executive Director of the La Crosse County Historical Society, and Bob Mullen, the Board Chair of the Historical Society. Thank you, Peggy and Bob, for joining me today.
Hi. Welcome.
So let's start with the new Heritage Center. I know it's been in the works for quite some time. Talk about what it has taken to get that new building up and running and the facility established there on I think it's on Main Street in La Crosse.
Well, late last year we found out that we would be vacating the Riverside Museum in Riverside Park. And so we started scrambling to find a place to go, because we wanted to keep a public face, a place where people could come and for the Historical Society. And so Peggy and board members and staff members began looking for places, and we found 506 Main, which looked like a good place, I'm stumbling too much here, so maybe Peggy, you want to take over.
Yes, we knew we wanted to be where the foot traffic was, that we wanted a replacement for Riverside Park, that for Riverside Museum, that would be more than a replacement, that would really showcase what we're capable of, frankly. And we wanted a good location, and I think we found it in 506 Main Street.
So
then we started working to put it together.
And I definitely want to get into just, you were telling me a little bit in the planning of this conversation, what goes into making sure that a museum space is designed correctly and all those kinds of things. And you've gone through some important steps to do that. But first of all, the people who live here, I don't know if it's like any other town, but often the people who live here are the ones who don't do the touristy things or the educational things, or, you know, we live here, we go to work, we come home, we are with our families. And I'll be honest, growing up here, I didn't learn a lot about the history of La Crosse until much later in my life. Talk about, Peggy, what aspects of the town's history do you think it's important for us as residents to know?
I think, first of all, it's important for us to know that people have lived in this region far long before there was La Crosse City or La Crosse County, and that those people are still here and that they're part of our community now. They still have their own culture, but they're also Americans and La Crosse citizens and Wisconsin citizens. So that's an important step. Another is how diverse La Crosse is. And the more you learn about the history, diversity isn't something new that was just invented by liberals to beat us over the head with. La Crosse has been diverse from the very first people who started creating the city we know today. People from all parts of the world came here. There were early African-American settlers as early as the 1850s. There were people from Europe were here, from different countries in Europe. And I know we joke about it, but you know, if you were German Catholic or German Lutheran and you intermarried, that was diversity in those days. So that is one thing I would like them to absorb and to know.
You talked about there being people here long before essentially white settlers came to the area. How important is it to remind people and to teach them about not just La Crosse, but the entire Coulee region and the entire Driftless area as ancestral homes for Native Americans and the legacy that we have here because of whose land we occupy?
I think you said that really well yourself, actually. They are still here. So there are Native American kids growing up here who are going to be citizens here. I would think that the best thing for anybody who wants the best for La Crosse and who loves this region would want those children to grow up with a strong sense of identity and a sense of pride and a sense that they are important to this region and that they have a contribution to make. Because La Crosse and the Coulee region is going to be more successful and stronger if all of its residents grow up feeling that way.
Bob, as the chairman of the board for the La Crosse County Historical Society, your organization has an interesting role because you've got not just the preservation of history in terms of keeping track of the old stuff, but the constant contextualizing of that history into ways that we appreciate it in comparison to our modern times. So talk about the role of the Historical Society and why it's so important that history be preserved in the way that you're doing it.
You know, I've been involved in history most of my life, and I've always seen the need for studying it. Because we learn from it, from both our mistakes and our successes, and I think that's important for us to share with not only the residents of the area and the visitors to the area, but our school children too, to instill a little bit of, well, not just pride, but knowledge of what went on before, what we did. You know, we made mistakes, we made some errors, but we also did a lot of things right. And you know, that's how we learn. You know, it's people look at history in different ways and from different viewpoints. And it's kind of what Peggy was getting at a little earlier, that you know, you talk to say a Ho-Chunk, a person from the Ho-Chunk tribe about the history of this area, you're probably going to get a different history than what maybe I learned when I was growing up in La Crosse.
So the brand new facility is the La Crosse Area Heritage Center. It's on Main Street, as we've been talking about. Peggy, talk about what a viewer or what a visitor will experience when they walk in the door. What is going to strike them first?
I think the first thing that will strike them is that there is a fishing boat in the middle of the floor. It was made in La Crosse in 1952 by a resident here. There may be people, I believe there are people who knew Frank Voigt and remember him. It was bought by his friend Wally Kofta. Am I saying it right, Bob? I'm forgetting his name.
I think that's right. Yeah.
He was the owner of the boat. It was actually his children. He's deceased now. His children donated the boat to us. So we really want to emphasize things made in La Crosse. We also like to emphasize life in La Crosse and life on the river, which is a huge part of life here. And we also want to make people feel that they're part of the flow of history. You know, history didn't stop at some time in the past. I think we've all sort of had been slapped in the face with that this year, because it's like, oh, I guess we're living in a historic time right now. And it's not that much fun sometimes. So that's what you see. You see a boat, you see a big boat, you see a large mural. We had an artist paint an original mural on the wall, which is a scene of La Crosse seen from the Mississippi River with the bridges in the background. What else do you see when you walk in, Bob?
Well, I think to me, the first thing you notice is when you walk in is, especially you might compare it to what we had at Riverside last year, and you're struck by the openness, that it's a big, open, bright space. There's lots of space to walk around and view things. And I also think we've taken the best of what was at the old Riverside Museum and brought it in there, but we've added quite a bit of other stories to it too. And we've put the stories into context, given you more information about those stories. We have artifacts to illustrate some of the stories that we're talking about, but and we have large banners that with mostly photographs and texts that really explains, say for instance, we were talking about logging, of course, because that was so instrumental in the growth of La Crosse. We have a couple large images of the logging camps and some artifacts from there, but we also have a description of what was going on in the logging camps. Why was it so important? And I think it helps people to relate both to the images and to the pictures, and in my case, it relates to my ancestors, because I have a couple ancestors that worked in the logging camps.
As you walk through the space, Bob, what strikes you as maybe, do you have a favorite exhibit in there or a favorite item?
Gosh.
Talk about the Gunter's chain, Bob.
The Gunter's chain. Yes.
Probably not your favorite thing. It's this rusty ball of chain. And I remember when we first found it in the collections in storage, and I'm like, oh, there's a bunch of rusty old chain in this box. Whereas Bob got really excited because he knew what he was looking at. He said, well, that's a Gunter's chain. That's wonderful. That was used to survey the land in La Crosse County. And I had never heard of these things. Every Gunter's chain is exactly the same length. And people literally walked every foot of this land, measuring it out with this chain, or a chain just like it. And don't ask me how long it is, because I already forgot.
It's 66 feet, and there's 100 links in the chain. But we also have an old surveyor's compass that would have been used with a chain like that in La Crosse. It was used in La Crosse to survey various sections of the city. And along with it, we have copies of original handwritten descriptions written by the surveyors as they were doing that surveying work in La Crosse in the 1840s. I agree. That's one of my favorite sections there, because it goes back to the very beginnings of the city.
Peggy, do you have a favorite artifact in the museum?
I have favorite artifacts in the collection. I'm not sure if my favorite artifacts are on display, but I would not want to have this conversation and not mention that we have a whole section on beer, which is an important part of the history of La Crosse.
And important to bring up for a lot of our listeners, I'm sure.
Yes, it is. There is a collecting genre called Breweriana. We have a very nice collection, and some of that is on display. Much of it was a gift, was donated by a local collector named Ty Schwalbe. And so there's a lot of it, it's advertising tchotchkes and little decorations that were used in put up in beer in bars. And also one of these banners that Bob was talking about has reproductions of several dozen old beer labels, which are just beautiful examples of old printing and have a kind of advertising that we would never do nowadays. They seem to do a lot of things that look like they're focused up for kids, like Santa Claus beer and beer with elf labels with elves on it. So they're very attractive and interesting.
It's interesting, something that we might consider to be just a pastime or something like that. But given the eyes of history and just the passage of time, it's a glimpse into a whole other way of producing. Like you were talking about, the artistic value of those things is something that maybe we didn't consider at the time.
Oh, I don't think they did. Do you, Bob? I don't think they thought of that as fine art when they were making beer advertising labels.
Probably not fine art, but this is early 20th century, late 19th and early 20th century, and I'm sure the engravers of the lithographic stones that printed these considered it some sort of art.
We're speaking with Peggy Derrick, the executive director of the La Crosse County Historical Society, and the board chairman, Bob Mullen. Thanks to both of them for joining us, and thanks to you who have reached out to show your support for WPR during our fall member drive. We're in a member drive, and it's time to ask for your vital support of what we're doing here at WPR and all the programs like Newsmakers that you've come to depend on. We're asking for you to consider making a gift of a one-time donation or maybe an ongoing gift of $10 or $20 a month, even $100 a month. If that's the right amount for you, you can do that at WPR.org. You could also call 888-202-2552. Remember, with your donation of any amount, you'll be entered to win a year of coffee, wine, and cheese. That's at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. More with Peggy Derrick and Bob Mullen in a moment. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse. Thank you very much for tuning in today, and thanks to those who have contributed during our fall member drive here at WPR. Remember, you rely on the programs like Newsmakers for great conversations with the movers and shakers in our area. You also enjoy on different times on our station listening to music or hearing wonderful entertainment. How about Chapter a Day? Listening to that story over the lunch hour. You love what you hear on public radio and you want to support it by going to WPR.org or calling 888-202-2552. We've been talking to Peggy Derrick and Bob Mullen from the La Crosse County Historical Society, visiting about the brand new museum space that they've got downtown in La Crosse. It's the La Crosse Area Heritage Center, and it is open to visitors. And a big concern, obviously, COVID-19 ravaging many of the normal activities in our area, especially museums, arts organizations, concerts, those those kinds of things. But the new Heritage Center is open and is asking visitors to come on by. And there are some safety measures in place to make sure that everyone stays in good health who visits the center.
I consider it very safe to come to the museum right now. As Bob said, it's very open, the layout. You're never crowded with anyone. And once you come through the door, you do not have to touch anything else. If you're a member, it's free. You do not even have to pay. You just have to give them your name. They'll check. They'll know you're a member of the Historical Society, and then you're welcome to walk around. You don't have to touch another thing while you're there. Everyone in the space is required to wear a mask, including visitors. And initially, we thought we would reduce occupancy to a 15-person limit. Frankly, COVID is raging so badly right now that we backed that down to 7 at a time.
And that seems, in a space that's, you know, as big as a downtown storefront, that seems like a fairly small number of people to fit in at a time. So you think several people at a time could easily fit in the space comfortably and not come in too close to contact with each other?
As long as they didn't feel they had to stand in front of the same case at the same time and rub shoulders, I think they're very safe. And if they did that, they would be breaking our rule about physical distancing.
Yeah, this is 3,500 square feet. That's a lot of space for 7 people to be wandering through.
Yes, I checked with the city. Our actual occupancy should be 100.
Oh, wow. So you're well under the 25% recommendation.
Oh, yeah. Yes, we thought it better by half. To be
under. I want to give people a chance to hear what they need to know if they're planning to stop by. So do you have to make a reservation, or do you recommend making a reservation of any kind, or can people just show up?
You can go on our website and make a reservation. We have a program set up there for you to do that. Quite truthfully, attendance has not been heavy enough where you needed that reservation to just walk in. I hope I'm wrong and attendance goes up and you need a reservation, but right now the chances are very unlikely that it would be necessary. As long as the building is below that capacity of 7 visitors at a time, you can just come in.
And what's the cost for non-members?
For non-members, for adults, it's $5. For students of all ages, it's $4. And children 4 and under are free.
There are a lot of aspects of exploring La Crosse's history, and we've been talking primarily about the La Crosse Area Heritage Center. But what other projects are going on right now with the Historical Society that you would like people to either attend or to be aware of?
We do have programming available on our website through videos. Every fall, we do an event called Discover the Silent City with a different theme. This year's theme was Votes for Women, and there is a video version of that tour that you can watch by going to our website and finding the link for Discover the Silent City. There's also a series of short videos by the Enduring Families Project, and they are an ongoing project that researches the history of African Americans in La Crosse, and they share it through performances and reenactments in different kinds of various different venues. They're going to be having a premiere of their, I think it's their 5th video that they're releasing, is coming up soon.
That's coming up, I think, in the next couple of weeks, and is being hosted on social media by the La Crosse Public Library, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm sure people can find La Crosse Public Library on social media or the Enduring Families Project itself and find that information. If people are interested in learning more about the Historical Society or interested in becoming members of the Historical Society, where can they find that information?
We have a website, lchshistory.org. I think, to me, the easiest way to find it is to just put in your search engine, La Crosse County Historical Society, and the Historical Society will come up. There's information there about membership. There's different levels of membership. Membership gets you free admission for the year. to both our museums, to the Heritage Center and to Historic Hixson House.
I'm glad you mentioned the Hixson House because we haven't talked about that yet. Is it still open and available to schedule tours?
Yes, it is. And it is decorated for Christmas. Not as intensely as most years, but Christmas has arrived at Hixson House. And you can schedule a tour by going online the way I just described, or by calling our office at 608-782-1980, and we'll be happy to schedule a tour for you. Hixson House tours are limited to 6 people or less. Masks are required, and we recommend that your group of 6 be a family group or a household that is sharing germs, shall we say, during this time.
People within the same bubble.
The bubble. I forgot what I was supposed to call it.
I guess I just watched too much basketball. So the Hixson House, what do people need to know in terms of costs for visiting the Hixson House?
Hixson House is $10 for adults. We do have a seniors rate of $8 and students are $6.
It's so interesting to think of those two different spaces because the museum that we've been spending most of our time talking about is in a storefront and the artifacts are in a controlled environment and there are contextual writings and displays surrounding it. The Hixson House, you walk in and you feel as though you're just transported into a household from 100 years ago, and it's just amazing.
Yes, it's an amazing historic house. And aficionados of house museums are a very intense but small audience. And I'm forever trying to help people understand how much there is to learn about the past, about La Crosse, about the Industrial Revolution and art and design and just all kinds of things when you're standing in that environment. Plus, one of the best comments I ever had was from a visitor who walked in and he just froze and he looked around and he said, "This smells just like my grandmother's house." And, you know, it wasn't like a warm, fuzzy cookie baking smell because we don't do that in Hixson House. It was just, and not in a bad way, but it was an old house smell. It really took him back. It was fun to watch.
The space itself smells like history, I guess.
Yes.
Well, one more time for people who might not have caught it before, what's the website where they can find all this information that we've been talking about?
www.lchshistory.org. La Crosse County Historical Society, and don't forget the county.
Never, never. Peggy Derrick is the executive director of the La Crosse County Historical Society. Peggy, thank you very much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. And Bob Mullen is the board chair of the La Crosse County Historical Society. Bob, thanks to you.
Thank you for inviting me.
And we thank Bob and Peggy for talking to us today on Newsmakers. And we thank you for lending your support to WPR during our year-end member drive. Thank you very much. You listen to the Ideas Network every single day. And when you do, you find inspiration. You find the information that you're looking for. And now it's time to do your part and give back to WPR. It's member drive at Wisconsin Public Radio. And this hour, we only have a few seconds more to ask for your support of the station that you love. You count on WPR to make a difference every day, to inform and entertain you. Now you get to support the radio that you rely on. Make your difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And remember, this drive, support the WPR programs you love and give books to kids. Ask for that Reach Out and Read thank you gift when you give $10 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. For my producer, Dawn Jewell, and my other producer, John Davis, and the rest of the lacrosse staff, I'm Ezra Wall. Hope you have a very good week, and please join us again for the next Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.